This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
Before we get into this week's episode of Over the Influence, we just wanted to flag up and let you know some of the content that's discussed during this week's episode with Gail McDonald. She's absolutely wonderful and it's a really, really nice chat. However, we do talk about the loss of Gail's son to suicide. We talk about mental health. So if you feel that this episode is not for you, we completely understand. And as always, thank you for listening.
Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Oh, hi, my name's Jeanette and I'm now alcohol-free for around 150 days, which is a miracle to say the least. I've been trying to go alcohol-free for about a decade, on and off, doing a month here, a week here, 2 months here, you know the score. But now I'm 150 days in and absolutely loving it. Life is so much better. Being part of the OTI community has helped me vastly. It's fun. It looks at what you're gaining, not what you're missing out, which was a mistake I made before. I always thought I was missing out on life when I wasn't drinking. Oh my God, how wrong was I? Life is great without a drink. Just try it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. As always, it's absolutely fabulous to have you listening to this. It's just a brilliant podcast that bangs on about sobriety week in, week out. And it's worth adding at this point that no matter how big this podcast gets, and let's face it, Ben, it's pretty big right now, we're doing not so bad at all, it will always be free for you to listen to every single Monday. We say until the end of time, bold statement, but there we go, you heard it here. An introduction as to who we are, or if you are already a listener, a reintroduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I am now, 5 years and a month, 6 weeks alcohol free. Stopped drinking back end of the summer in 2018 after thinking about it for a very, very long time. I knew 30 days wasn't quite enough in order to experience true alcohol free life, so I'll give myself a bit of a chance, really. Went for 90 days, turned into a year, and here we are, 5 flipping years later, banging on about sobriety. I drank too much, too quickly, and far too often. And I stopped drinking and everything changed. And quite frankly, it's the best thing I've ever done in the world. And I'm nearly 50 as well, actually. I'm 50 next month. My much younger and handsome co-host. What the? What? Why? What, where did that come from?
Sharon, stop. I don't know, but I liked it. Hi, I'm Ben. I'm 35. I live in Liverpool. Dad to Leo. Stepdad to Alfie and Millie, husband to Jem, and I'm 3 years and 3 months alcohol free. And Sharon, my buttocks are fine.
I'm glad.
Just to give you context to that, we've just recorded our premium podcast. We did a walk in Edale, the last OTI adventure of 2023, on Saturday. And I said to Sharon, so how are your legs? And she went, oh, my legs and my buttocks are fine. I said, didn't ask about. Just asked about the legs.
Just ask about my arse.
Yeah. It was good though, wasn't it? Our last adventure
it was
of 2023.
So good. I mean, it wasn't without drama in the 24 hours leading up to the event, because obviously there were weather warnings and Storm Babette. Oh, it was a nightmare. But plan B was put into operation, and between us and our outdoor leaders and our fabulous, very accommodating members, we got there. So we did a reduced route. We had a later start time. Mm-hmm. We managed to avoid the worst of the weather. We ate much of sausage rolls and pastry, a lot of Haribo, and ended up walking 10 miles in the glorious sunshine.
We nearly didn't make it back to the car park, though, did we, Shaz? Because there was a moment where the riverbanks had all burst, and we had to kind of try and scale what was supposed to be a path, but it turned into a river. And yes, Sharon just looked at it and she went, are you joking?
I'm not going across that.
You had a bit of a diva moment, didn't you?
Are you joking?
I did not throw a diva strop. I was just
put my feet
concerned.
Are going to get wet.
I have my new boots on, yeah. Ben.
You weren't very happy about that bit, were you?
No, I wasn't. Mm. I wasn't.
But it was a good
fun
day.
You're right.
What do you mean?
6 foot odd, and there's me, little 5 foot and a bit.
It does always make me smile. I'm walking next to Sharon, and I'm kind of like plod.
Striding
and Sharon's
ahead.
Next to me. Plop, 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 tap, 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 tap.
You're like a little pony like that. Waiting for me, Ren.
It's good,
great.
Though,
it was so good. Yeah.
Thank you to everyone who's joined us on an adventure this year. From the top of Ben Nevis to Malvern and Edale and Snowdon. They've been awesome. So thank you.
Yeah, and keep your eyes and ears peeled for the Over the Influence programme of events for 2024. We are currently working on it. Enough about this, Outdoor Gubbins. It is time to talk to our lovely guest who is waiting very patiently in the wings of this Zoom call. Gail McDonald, currently based in Spain, the woman behind Sober Bliss. And Gail, welcome to Over the Influence. It's really lovely to see you. I feel like we've sort of known each other for many, many years, but I do believe this is probably the first time we've actually spoken in real life.
It is, yes. Hello, thank you. So nice to be here. I'm really enjoying it so far. Thank you.
It's nice to see you again, Gail, because we've had a chat before, haven't we?
We have. It was Ben's business lunch a couple of years ago, I think it was, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we talked all about the kind of the business side of what you do. But here today, we're here to talk about your story, aren't we? Personal story.
Yes, we are.
And a bit about the business too, of course. But, sorry, Sharon, I'm doing your bit here. You're just looking at me like... But,
no, I'm not.
You always leave.
You crack on.
Sorry. But Gail, you know, where do we start?
Oh, I don't know. I think I'm alcohol-free around the same length of time as you are, Sharon. So March 2018.
Oh, you're a little bit further ahead. Wait. Yeah, I was September 2018, Gail.
Why? Okay. September's a great month to go alcohol-free, I think. Much better than March. My first two months were sat on the sofa eating cake, drinking tea, because that's about all I could manage. Thankfully, it did get better after that. So, yeah, here we are, 5 and a bit years later, still alcohol-free. And still, I have to say, sitting on the sofa, drinking tea, eating chocolate. I've changed to chocolate now.
That's no bad thing. There's a lot of our community members and listeners to this podcast that sit on the sofa drinking tea and coffee, eating chocolate, ice creams and cakes and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Can we rewind previous to March 2018 and just sort of have a bit of a chat as to why you decided to make the change and what life looked like for you before you removed alcohol?
It was quite chaotic, I have to say. I lived then in a tiny little hamlet in the middle of nowhere in the hillybilly village in Spain. So there wasn't a lot to do. When we first moved over here, we used to go out a lot and, you know, go to the bars, have the tapas, have the beer, meet the locals, practice our Spanish, which is all very social because it's, you know, they drink a lot here, but it's very social. They don't tend to drink at home. So we did both. We drank at the bars, practiced our Spanish, came home and carried on drinking, basically, my husband and I. And it just kind of went on from there. When we first came over here, we were renovating a cave house. So it was, you know, physical work all day, beers in the evening to relax, going out from time to time, various fiesta, all very Spanish, all very social. And then it just kind of, as I said, carried on, got out of hand. And I personally didn't really know how to stop. I did stop when I was pregnant with my second son. So I went a whole year, 18 months through pregnancy, breastfeeding, not drinking, and it was amazing. And then pretty much, probably about 18 months, so he would have been 7, 8 months old. I don't know, something happened and I started drinking again. And then I did have another period in 2013 where I stopped for 6 months completely. It was just a spontaneous thing. And after that 6 months, again, something silly, celebrity moment made me pick up another beer and started drinking again. But I'd never forgotten just how amazing it felt those 6 months to not think about alcohol at all. It didn't enter my head. It was a complete peace of mind and freedom. I managed to buy, you know, new bedding with the money that I'd saved, and we went walking, and I helped the kids with their homework. And, you know, I was the kind of mum, I think, that I always knew that I was and that I could be, the sensible one, you know, who got them into bed on time and all the rest of it, not partying until crazy hours. And I wanted that back, but it took me 5 years to get that back. And during those 5 years, you know, it just kind of snowballed and went pretty bad at some points. I was drinking every day. I didn't get blackout drunk every day. I didn't get drunk every day. But I did need a beer or few to kind of help me through the daily routine. You know, I was a stay-at-home mom. We had our own business. And it got very boring at times. We were quite isolated. So I needed something, anything to help me, you know, write an email, make a phone call, homework, cooking, bath time, bedtime, all of it. I needed a beer for all of it. All the while not liking what I was doing, but at the same time not really being able to get out of it, which, of course, made me feel worse about myself because I knew that I could do it, that I'd done it before. So what was wrong with me? Why couldn't I do it this time? I used to get up in the middle of the night, you know, halfway between drunk and hungover when, you know, it's that 3 a.m. terrors, isn't it? When your heart's racing and you feel rubbish. And I used to write pages and pages about how crap I was and why couldn't I do it and my kids deserved better and tomorrow it would all be different. And of course, it wasn't. And it took a long time to get out of that hole again. It wasn't a great number of years, I have to say. Very isolated, very small living, you know, I didn't feel good about myself. There wasn't much growth happening there. And the kids suffered a lot, you know, because I would probably start drinking about 2, 3 p.m. So any after school activity or club or whatever was out of the question because we'd been drinking, my husband and I. And if we did have to do anything, it was such a resentment, you know, because we couldn't drink. So we have to get there and come back quick so then we could get on with the business of drinking when we got back. It very much took over, you know, and that's not to say that it was beer, so it wasn't anything hard, you might say. And we weren't rolling around drunk every night, but it was still the focus. Whenever we went shopping, we had to make sure we had enough beer in and wine as well. Sometimes that was, you know, our life. It did kind of revolve around alcohol, making sure we always had enough. It was always there. And then we were happy and we could relax.
And what changed then in March 2018? Like, because I think a lot of our listeners, especially people who are kind of, we class themselves currently as sober curious, It's interesting, you know, Gail, we did on through our premium podcast a few weeks ago, we asked people, how old are you now? How old were you when you stopped drinking? But how old were you when you first thought, right, I probably need to have a think about my drinking here? And it's amazing, Wasn't it, Shaz, that it was almost every response. It was about 10 years that people were thinking about it.
Yeah, there was a real pattern, particularly, I don't want to cast like a massive generalisation, but particularly the women that we spoke to, I think as well, that there was a seed planted like 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago in some cases where they thought this isn't going well. And yeah, like you, Ben, just listening to Gail there, so much of what you said really resonated. Sorry, Ben, what was your question again?
So you described it as being in the hole. You know, you were waking up and you were writing, you know, this needs to stop tomorrow, but it didn't. So why did it? Like, what was it that actually made it click in March 2018?
Yeah. My husband, actually, we'd had conversations before about how we didn't like it and how we wished we could, you know, put a stop to it. And he was really good. He could go 2, 3, 4 days, a week even, without having any alcohol. I was the one who would kind of egg him on and, do you not want to go to the shop? Make sure we've got enough in for the weekend or whatever. And there'd be times that he would say, oh, no, I'm not going to have a drink tonight. And I'd be like, what, really? And then I'd be like in a huff because I wanted one and he wasn't having one, so I couldn't. But this day, he got up and he said, oh, I'm not drinking today. Don't feel like it. And I said, oh, well, I am, because there's 3 beers in the fridge. We can't leave them, you know, alone. I have to finish them off. So I did. I had the 3 beers and it was fine. And the next day he got up, well, we both got up and, you know, just getting on with the morning. And I said, so are we buying any more beer today? And he said, no, I don't think I will. He said, maybe you should stop as well, have a break. And in that moment, part of me was, what? What do you mean? I'm not ready for it. You know, I need to read the blogs. I need to get all of the alcohol-free drinks in and the cakes and the biscuits and all the rest of it. Not ready too soon. And the other part of me was just, oh, thank you. I am so ready for this. And that was it. Never went back from that moment.
Would you say, Gail, that you were, because it doesn't sound like you were necessarily physically dependent on alcohol in terms of the number of units that you were drinking, but would you say that you may have been emotionally dependent on alcohol?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It got to the point where I needed to either have a beer in my hand or a glass of wine or to know it was there in order to, you know, relax. So if anything happened, if any stressful situation arose or I was cross or one of my kids had done something, I would have my little crutch, you know. I just needed it to be part of my routine, what I did throughout the day. So, yeah, I felt that I couldn't do anything without it, much as I kind of hated it at the same time, I still wanted it, still felt like I needed it. And it was a thought of not having it that was, you know, really scary. That was a thing that put me off from trying, I suppose, just the thought of it not being there. So definitely I was emotionally attached, dependent. Yeah, yeah.
When you were describing to us then, Gail, about when you actually stopped watching you on the Zoom call, you actually just put your hands together and looked up and went sort of like, thank you, as though you were just so massively relieved, despite feeling worried about not having the alcohol and how this might go. I just picked up a real sense of relief and almost like, thank God this could be over.
Yeah, yeah. It did feel like that. I probably didn't realise just how profound it was, but it was like a massive weight had been lifted because finally I'd made the decision and it felt like it was a, you know, a true, a proper decision this time. It wasn't a wishy-washy middle of the night scrawling in my notebook, yeah, I'm going to stop. It was a, you know, I felt it in my bones kind of decision, and that was so, yeah, relieving, enlightening, I suppose. I don't want to go all, you know, seeing the light, but it was a bit like that. It was literally as if a weight had just been lifted off, and I was just so happy to not have to carry all of that, you know, struggle with me anymore. I didn't know what it was going to look like. I just knew that I kind of left it. And then I could get on and figure things out after that.
Can we also talk about you as a drinking mum and you as a sober mum and the impact of removing alcohol, what it had on your family?
Yeah, well, being a drinking mum wasn't the kind of mum that I like. I didn't like myself when I was drinking. You know, it was very important to me, still is, that my kids are safe, especially at bedtime. I had this big thing about bedtime. It must have been from when they were babies, you know, because it was bath bottle bed. And when they were tucked up in bed, safe, then I was happy. And when the drinking took over, bedtimes were, you know, chaotic. And that was the thing that hurt me the most, that this sense of security and safety was jeopardized because of the alcohol. You know, they thought it was great because they would be allowed to stay up and watch cartoons and, you know, we'd have chicken at midnight and crazy things like that and parties. And then in the morning or the next day, then again, they'd be allowed to sit and watch TV for a lot far longer than I would normally, you know, allow them to. I would try to spoil them. There was just no consistency. It was very, yeah, chaotic. They didn't really know what to expect. And I didn't put them first as I, you know, wanted to, as I should have done, because the alcohol always came first. And that's, you know, really difficult to accept, to come to terms with. But it's funny, when we stopped drinking, probably about a month went by and, like, nobody noticed. Nobody said anything. We were like, oh, we're doing this amazing thing. You know, isn't it lovely? And we're like, oh yeah, I suppose so. So it was obviously more felt by me than them. But as a non-drinking mum, then this is going to sound really boring, but we've got the consistency back. You know, there's rules, there's boundaries. They know what to expect. If I have to, you know, get cross or raise my voice, then it's for a genuine reason. It's not because I've taken something the wrong way and, you know, flew off the handle and gone somewhere where I didn't want to go. It's not, you know, a knee-jerk reaction caused by alcohol. It's a genuine thing. And there's less of those. Everything is a lot calmer. I think we're much more open now as a family, and also I do keep my promises. So if I say we're going to do something the next day, then we generally do it. I'm not in bed hungover and putting them off. So I think I'm more authentic as a non-drinking mum, and it's just a lot calmer, which is, it's nice. It's nice.
We are just going to take a quick break from this chat with Gail McDonald. And actually, before we carry on, we'll just point you in the direction of Gail's website if you want to find out more about her and what she does. If you head to sober-bliss.com, you can certainly read more about Gail there and the support she offers to other people. Speaking of which, talking of support, this episode focused very much on mental health. We touch on the subject of suicide, and on that we wanted to share with you some fantastic resources if maybe yourself or somebody you know, a friend or family member, is affected by this. Ben, you're looking at a website now, aren't you, as we speak?
Yeah, this is a website that Gail pointed us in the direction of, that she wanted to kind of highlight. And it's called 3dadswalking.uk. So the number 3dadswalking.uk. The dads are Mike, Andy and Tim. Mike, Beth's dad. Andy, Sophie's dad. Tim, Emily's dad. And 3dadswalking, they've been doing this for a couple of years. Right at the top of the website, it just says raising awareness in big letters. Suicide is the biggest killer of those under 35 in the UK. We only learn this terrifying fact because our daughters took their own lives within the last 3 years. By raising awareness, we hope that we can prevent other families from being devastated by suicide. These guys are awesome. Shaz, if you haven't had a look at their website, go and have a look. If you're listening now, you haven't had a look at the website, go and have a look, because it's, you can, you know, loads of buttons to donate as well. But there's lots of kind of information on suicide prevention. But it's also really brave and really lovely that, you know, they've got profiles of the dads, and also it says right on the front page, meet the girls, and you can learn more about Beth, excuse me, Sophie and Emily. Yeah, just, it's like, you hear stories like this, Shaz, and, you know, as a parent now, I hear it differently. Do you know what I mean? You can't really understand it, I don't think, unless you are a parent yourself. But I'm really glad that Gail points us in the direction of these guys. We should talk to these guys, you know. I mean, I know that I don't know if they're alcohol-free or not, but just...
It doesn't really matter,
just
does it?
Amazing.
It doesn't matter. What they're doing is absolutely phenomenal. ThreeDadsWalking.uk. And as well, we talk so much about mental health, but I think in particular that of young men who feel there's no way out, who feel there's nobody to talk to, who feel that maybe there is no support. There absolutely is. You know, if you are online, you can get some numbers. You've got the Samaritans, you've got Calm, superb organisation, the Campaign Against Living Miserably. They're on online as well. Just head to their website. And a group that's now national. So wherever you are listening to this in the UK, the chances are there is going to be an Andy's Man Club somewhere near you.
Yeah.
That's just so, so good. In fact, it was on my radio show a couple of weeks ago. One of the regional facilitators came in. What a brilliant guy. These are groups that are run by men that have had their own mental health struggles and that are now there to help other people. There is zero judgment. They do it online. They do it face to face. Head to their website. Just look for Andy's Man Club. Stick in your postcode or your town. You can guarantee there'll pretty much be a club or a meeting or some sort of gathering near where you live in your area. There are so many resources. Keep talking, seek out the information, and if you want any further information from us at all about any of the links that we've mentioned, just drop us an email, otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Gail, how old were your children then when you stopped drinking?
Hang on, let me think. I'm rubbish at maths, going backwards.
5 years ago, knock off
five. 5 years ago, yeah, knock off five. So Nico would have been 9 and Joshua 16.
So excuse me for asking this. Nico, do you two sons?
Yes, Nico, Josh.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
We spoke on the podcast. It wasn't the podcast. I apologise. You spoke with Ben within our community a couple of years ago. And since we last spoke to you, and I hope you don't mind me asking you about this at this stage of the podcast, Gail, you shared with us on an email that you lost your son, Josh, your eldest son, only 7 months ago at the age of 21.
Yeah.
Do you mind talking about that and how you've coped over the last few months?
Yeah. I don't know if cope is the right word. Kind of hanging on and getting through it is probably the best way to describe it. But yeah, with my heart's hammering, I can feel it already, but in March of this year, so about 7 and a bit months ago, we got the news that Joshua had died by suicide. Completely out of the blue. We had no idea. He wasn't living with us at the time. You know, he was doing his own thing. We didn't see him that often, but the last update was he was starting a new job and he was happy. And this happened. It was just like a punch in the stomach, I suppose, is the best way to describe it. Everything fell apart, really, when we got the news. And the mayor of the village came up and told us, and the mayor never makes house calls, so we should have known that, you know, something was wrong when he came up. And then our world just fell apart after that. It's very brutal here, the way they deal with that kind of thing. I don't want to go into too much detail, but we got the news on the Thursday. And on the Saturday, they basically handed me his ashes back in the urn. It was so quick, all in Spanish, 100 miles an hour, making decisions, you know. We had to clear out his property that he was living in, and I think something had, was very wrong, because there was an energy when we went in to where he was living, which didn't feel right. The reaction of the people in the village has just been horrific, I have to say. You know, they turned on us. And I don't know if it's because it's a small village, it's very traditional, very Catholic. The fact that it was suicide, which is a really challenging, complex thing to deal with anyway. But the past 7 months have just been horrendous. Not only have I lost my son, not only did he, you know, it was suicide, but everything else on top of that, it just makes it so hard to get up some days, you know, but we've had to, we've been on our own, dealing with it all. So that's one of the reasons why we're leaving. We just can't be here anymore. It's just too difficult. And it's the unknown as well. It was just so shocking. And I think that's why I said I don't know if cope's the right word, because in some ways it doesn't feel real. You know, there's been so much to do. Only last month did we finish the last bit of paperwork to do with his death. You know, they got the names wrong on the death certificate, things like that. Just been problem after problem after problem. Very little support from the local people. Just awful. Awful, awful, awful. And I'm so grateful that I am sober, because if I'd been drinking, then I dread to think how we wouldn't have coped. It would have made it 10 times worse, 1,000 times worse, because such a massive thing, and the pain is just, it's a natural instinct, isn't it, to want to numb it out, get rid of it. Sorry. But I just know that it would have just made the whole thing unbearable, even more unbearable than it has been. Yeah. So alcohol doesn't help. Doesn't help anything. Makes it worse.
Girl, thank you for talking so honestly. I know I speak on behalf of Ben when we just say it's just the most heartbreaking thing, and we're just so very sorry to hear what happened with your son Josh. Do you mind me asking, what was he like as a young man? Are you happy to talk about him?
Yeah, everybody loved him in the village. He was just reliable. He was funny. He was quite stubborn, as young men can be. He had a lot of friends, a huge amount. You know, number of friends. If anybody needed anything doing, then Joshua could be counted on to do it. Unless it was dishes at home, then he couldn't be relied upon to do anything like that. But yeah, he was polite, friendly, handsome, you know, all the things that you would want to say about a child. He was all of that.
Gail, it's been really difficult to hear you talking about Josh, not just because, of course, that you lost him 7 months ago. I'm really sorry to hear that you've had such a difficult time since. I mean, we talk about this a lot in relation to alcohol-free life, and we talk about language and the power of words, and you said that Josh died by suicide, not committed suicide, and that's a really important distinction.
Yeah.
I feel like I just what a dreadful reaction to have in terms of kind of societally. I'm just really sorry that you've also had to, you've had to face that too.
Yeah.
I want to bring it back to alcohol and alcohol free. And speaking of that society, you've described the small village that you live in Spain. Are you still in the cave house, by the way? Because even though I've never heard the phrase cave house before, obviously it does exactly what it says on the tin. You know, it's a house in a cave. Are you still in the cave house?
No, we're not. We're in a big warehouse, so the opposite, really.
Yeah.
A cave house with 90 square metres. Imagine a little hobbit house. You know, it did have windows and things, but it went all the way back. It was, you know, it was in the rock. So it was very, the acoustics were brilliant. It was very cosy and comforting. And we were there for 12 years. But now we live in a massive, leaky, big warehouse, which, yeah, I do miss the cave. That was really nice.
Do you think that, you know, when you first started, because it's a small place that you live, and it does, as you mentioned, quite traditional. Did you get much? Because I think one of the things that we always talk about here is, and it is changing in the UK, definitely, even in the 3 and a bit years that I've been doing this, at the beginning, definitely got more of the, what are you doing that for? Oh, go on, just have one. What, are you, you've got a problem or something? You know, now it's definitely, the narrative is more, oh, fair play, mate. Oh, well done. I've been thinking about that. Do you think that, did you face much resistance to your choice to go alcohol free from the people that you were, you know, your neighbours, and because it was a more traditional, smaller place?
No, not at all. Weirdly, it's very normal to go out here and not drink or to have alcohol free beers. In fact, the Spanish have got a really good selection of alcohol free beers. I don't like alcohol-free beer, so I never really, you know, drink it, but it's very common to go into a bar here and not drink. They don't go out to get hammered like we do. They go out to socialise and to mix, and it's not a big deal. I think what's more important for them is to be out and have something. It doesn't really matter what it is, and just be there and be seen and be social and chat. So it was other expats really who'd commented, not the locals. I remember, I think I would have been about maybe coming up to a year alcohol free. I'd lost a lot of weight. I had more energy and that bounce, you know, that you get. And somebody, an expat, another expat in the village, was like, oh, wow, you look amazing. Like, what have you done? I said, oh, I'm stopped drinking. And she went, are you sure there's not some other reason why you look so amazing? Have you joined a gym? Or it's like, no, just not drinking.
She went, please tell me there's another reason. Definitely there's another reason. Got to be.
Can't be that. Yeah, it can't be that. Yeah.
You said at the beginning, Gail, when we started chatting, I think this was before we started recording, that yes, you're talking to us from Spain at the moment, but you're coming back to the UK, is that right?
Yes, we are. Given everything that's happened, this isn't the place for us anymore, and it's finally kind of coming together. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, then I will be back in the northeast of England, which in itself is really scary. I'm very mixed at the moment, because although you know, what's happened has happened, and I know this isn't the right place for us anymore. Still been my home for 19 years, and it's difficult to let that go. And also, when we get back to the UK, we haven't actually got anywhere to live, so that's going to be interesting. We have got some lovely friends who are going to let us stay with them for a while.
Any caves in the northeast?
There's not, unfortunately, no.
No.
No. Although we did dig out a lot of our own, so if there's a bit of random rock hanging around, we might dig our own. No.
I love that. Absolutely love it. Gail, tell us about the work that you now do to help other people on the back of your own, excuse me for using this word, alcohol-free journey.
Yeah.
Because for so many people, that they set out, don't they, on this adventure, and you're like, right, okay, I'm going to stop drinking. And then before you know it, you're 6 months in and 12 months in, and here we are at 2 years. And then, you know, in your case, more than five.
Mm.
And you just want to give back, don't you? You want to shine the light for others and let people know that there absolutely is another way. It's not always easy. We know that, big disclaimer. You know, if you've talked about, my goodness me, what you've had to deal with in sobriety, it's just, it doesn't get much worse as a mum. It's simple as that. So tell us about that, Gail, and how you now use your own story to help others.
Yeah, well, I think in the beginning, I just felt, as we said, so relieved, so grateful that I wasn't having to carry this around with me anymore. And I was probably a bit annoying, because I'll be like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, why isn't everybody doing it? You know, wanting to go around and like shake people and hug them and say, try, it's amazing. But obviously that wasn't really very helpful. So I started initially just blogging about my journey. You know, here's my first 100 days. This is what happened. And here's a top tip for, I don't know, going out, or, you know, just little bits and pieces of helpful information that you might find interesting or useful if you are going through a similar thing. And my background is in teaching. I used to be a languages teacher in the UK, secondary school languages. And then when I came over to Spain, I taught English, and I taught English online for a long time. So it was kind of a natural progression. I did a coaching qualification, I did addiction therapy training, and that's how I got into it, really. I wrote my own 12-week program, which has now been adapted, and that's in my book. And it just went from there, really. Started working with people one-on-one. That's where my strength is, because it's such a personal journey. It's such a challenging journey. I'm using that word again. It's such a brilliant experience, and everybody's is unique, and the support I found over the years that people need is vastly different depending on where they are, their background, their circumstances. And I'm the type of person who takes a lot and I give a lot. It's a very intimate, intense experience. So really, it's best one-to-one. So I hold a lot of space for people. I'm there for them every step of the way. And that's what I do. I try and help people see that despite the bad rap that sobriety can get, if you come at it from a different perspective, it can actually be, you know, the loveliest thing in the world, which is why I call my book Quit Drinking, Feel Good, because it can. It does. It feels really good. And I think if you come at it from that mindset and look for ways every single day, which is what I try to do, despite all the, you know, the crap, how can I make this good? How can I make it feel nice? How can I make it mine? You know, how can I make myself feel nourished and supported and loved today, so that sobriety doesn't become a thing over here that we're, you know, striving towards. It becomes part of us, part of who we are. We make it our way of life. And I think in order for it to stick and to feel good and to be sustainable, then we have to make it feel good. And we do have the power to do that. So that's really what I help people with, you know, no matter what it is they're going through, because yes, life's life, we still have to go through challenges, but how can I support myself through this in the best way possible with the tools that I have? And we do have a lot of tools. I think we just forget that they're there sometimes.
Have you ever thought about recording meditation tapes? Because you are a very calm person, Gail, but you're also very calming.
Yeah,
When you say things like, it was in my book, I love, you've got a lovely accent for it as well. We need to get you on some meditation tapes.
Wow. I do have a few meditations on YouTube and Insight Timer.
Oh, do you? There you go, you see. Because you are. You come across as, you're such a calm person. Oh, and you speak at such, you see, I'm brash, I'm loud, I'm northern. And I feel like I just need to bring it down. I need to bring it down now. Gail's in the room because she's just calm and considered. Yeah, just take a deep breath. Do you know what?
And let it go.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Let it go. Let it go.
Yeah. No, I do enjoy the meditations, actually. And I do them for myself a lot of the time. And then I just share them on Insight Timer and things. I don't know if I'm allowed to plug this, but one of my most popular meditations on Insight Timer is figuring out your why. Because I think if you can tap into, and we talked a little bit about this, Ben, on your business lunch. If you know why you're doing it and you can connect to the emotion of the reasoning behind it, then that's such a powerful way to keep you, you know, grounded in your decision. And the meditation that I've got on Insight Timer will really help you to connect with the inner part of you that wants to do, you know, the not drinking bit. Because we can know all the things. We can know why, you know, it gives us hangovers, it makes us do things, say things we regret, it's bad for us. But I think if we can feel it deep down, then it makes the process so much nicer, so much easier in some ways to stick to. So I would recommend anybody listening to listen to that first and then see where they go from there.
What's your why then, Gail? Because you didn't have time to read the blogs. You weren't buying the Quitlet. It just got sprung on you that you weren't buying beer that day because your fellow went, right, no, we're not having any more. So what's your why? You didn't have time to think about it. You didn't have time to plan it or research it. So what is yours?
My why is not drinking makes me again. Deep down, I know that I'm better off without it. I feel better. My life is better, even though at the minute it's kind of not. It still is underneath. It allows me to stay true to myself. I think that's it. You know, it's my authentic self that comes through when I'm not drinking. And living in line with my values is really important to me. That's why I'm not on social media anymore, because it just didn't fit with my values, with how I want to live my life. And drinking is about as far removed from my values as, you know, it can be. So my why is I can be myself. And when I'm myself, then that's, you know, much better for everybody around me.
Gail, thank you. It's been...
You're welcome.
A pleasure to chat on Over the Influence. It really, really has. And thank you for speaking so honestly about your son, Josh.
Thank you.
It's lovely to hear about him as a young man.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just send you lots and lots of love, simple as that, from two parents to another. Thank you so, so much. We wish you all the very best on your travels back to the UK when you get settled in your home region once again.
Send you a shovel.
he's fascinated by the whole cave thing. He really is, Gail, I can tell. Yeah, he's loving it. Little Hobbit cave.
Yeah.
Gail, before you go, give your book a plug. Where can people get it? What's it called? And also, I was going to say where people can find you, but as you just said there, you're not on social media. Do you have a website or anything like that?
Yeah, I do. I've got a website. It's called Sober Bliss. I'm on YouTube, Pinterest. If you just search Sober Bliss, then I'm sure I'll pop up somewhere. And that's the name of my book, Sober Bliss, Quit Drinking, Feel Good.
That's it in a nutshell, isn't it? Quit drinking, feel good.
Yeah.
Gail McDonald, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Huge thanks to this week's guest, Gail. What an absolutely phenomenal woman. And I know we said it during the course of the episode. Gail, we thank you so, so much for being so honest, for sharing such a painful and personal story with you. And you can guarantee that there'll be somebody listening that this episode will have helped. So again, thank you. Before we talk about some of the mental health resources available for anybody that's currently struggling, I just want to send you in the direction again of Gail's website. It is called sober-bliss.com. And in particular, Gail has written a blog and recorded a podcast all about her experiences, basically, of losing her son to suicide and how she says that her, you know, sobriety continues to support her. So if you head to the website, sober-bliss.com, you can read more about Gail's story there. And again, it's really important that we share with you a few of the resources that are available if you are struggling with your mental health, if there's somebody you know in your social circle, your friends or your family. So many resources, in particular for men. One of my favourite organisations, and I think they do brilliant things right across the country. You've got Andy's Man Club set up, obviously, as the title suggests, just simply for men. They have sessions probably near where you are listening to this, somewhere in the UK. And if you're not able to get to a session, they do online support as well. So just head to Andy's Man Club, stick in your postcode, and if you feel it might be of benefit, it can be absolutely life-changing. I know I've spoken to many, many people that have been either facilitators or a service user of that organisation, and they do brilliant things. There's a lot of help available, isn't there, Ben?
Yeah, I've been digging a bit more on the Three Dads Walking website, threedadswalking.uk. There's a number here that I think we should all probably put in our phones, actually, for Hopeline UK is one of the resources that they highlight. Open from 9 o'clock in the morning to midnight every single day of the year. Hopeline UK provides a free confidential call, text and email service inviting those considering suicide to speak openly about their feelings in confidence. We should probably put this in our phone, Shaz, shouldn't we? Because you never quite know. Like, it's just kind of, you meet people and you think, oh, hang on a second. You know, you don't seem too good. I don't know. I just feel like...
What's the number?
Right,
give us the
everyone
number.
Everyone should have this, I think. 0800 068 4141. That's 0800 068 4141. I'm going to put that in my phone right now. And that's for Hopeline UK, and it is for a helpline which supports young people 35 and under experiencing thoughts of suicide.
Amazing. Ben, thank you. Some really important resources there as well. Of course, you've got the Samaritans. You can find their number online. And you've also got CALM, Campaign Against Living Miserably. There is help out there. There really is. As always, huge thanks to Gail for her personal and honest discussions this week. It is much appreciated by us here at Over the Influence. And thank you to you for listening. As always, we will be back same time next week.